Remembrance. Kavik, 8 years old, had cursed the hunt. He was sure of it. He'd forgotten one of his amulets, or committed a taboo before heading out, or had made the right gestures to the spirits, but without the proper respect in his heart. And now he and Kalyan were separated from the others, turned around in the vicious blizzard that had swept down upon them like a predator. It was his fault, he wept, his tears freezing on his nose. His sorrow earned him a plap of a mitten over his face. No, Kalyan said, looming overhead. We'll be all right. This was prior to Kavik's growth spurt, and his older brother was still a giant who could block out the harsh skies themselves. The two of them trudged in the direction they believed was home, until the snowdrifts became overwhelming. Kalyan built them a quick shelter, and they spent the first of many nights shivering and hungry. The storm only abated in spurts, and during the brief lulls they could travel in, the land was a paper sheet, offering blankness instead of signs to orient by. Kavik couldn't tell how long they'd spent lost. They might have been wandering in a spiritual pocket, a floating space where the realms bled into each other. Kalyan cut strips off his own mitten and chewed the pieces of hide to make them soft enough for his little brother to swallow. A desperation tactic, so Kavik would have the energy to keep walking in the cold. Even then, they returned to camp with Kavik drooped across Kalyan's shoulders, barely conscious. They'd been gone for a month, nearly mourned as dead. His older brother had saved his life and carried him back to their parents. There was simply nothing Kalyan couldn't accomplish to keep his family safe. He'd lost 2 fingers to frostbite, though. The spot where he'd opened his mitten. Don't worry about it, he told a fretting Kavik. Middlers think 8's a lucky number. He wiggled the stumps on his hand for emphasis. Kavik did worry about it. He had been a burden, and the signs of his weakness were now permanently etched upon the person he looked up to most. And he was still convinced the expedition had turned unlucky because of him in the first place. The original unknown offense had not been accounted for. Since then, Kavik often wondered if he was supposed to have paid a greater price and left a part of himself behind on the ice like Kalyan had. Maybe he'd cheated the spirits by surviving intact. Because looking back on it, right around that time was the beginning of the turn. When hunts started souring across the region, slowly at first, but then inevitably. Failed season after failed season, forcing more people to cross the straits in search of work in the Earth Kingdom, and the newfangled Shang towns sprouting up. His family leaving the North Pole, drifting apart, Kalyan abandoning them. The misery of Bin-Ur. The footprints may have been different, but they could have all come from the same shape-changing beast, walking in an unbroken line from the past to the present. If so, Kavik only had himself to blame. The Avatar was the one who caught him. Her airbending pushed Kavik back to his feet, a second set of hands reaching across the room, and the rush of wind against his face roused him like a slap.
You've got to stop passing out in my inn, Akudan said.
Kavik was not in the mood for teasing anymore. His ribs were bellows, trying to squeeze too much air through too small a hole. Yang Chen, recognizing something in his agony, put her hand up for silence from the other two.
Breathe, she said to Kavik. Breathe first. Don't try to talk until you're ready.
Her posture was that of an animal expert, ready to rush to his side if he collapsed, but not wanting to spook him yet by coming closer. It took Kavik 5 full minutes before he could explain to everyone the initiation process for Chai Si's errand runners in Jeonduri.
and how the first body taking a ride out to sea, courtesy of his efforts, was Chiu. The same Chiu Yang Chen and Kavik had planted information on in the Bin Er tea house. They'd killed him. Together. Yang Chen blanched.
How could this have happened? You didn't say your broker was coming to Jeonduri.
He obviously changed his mind after I talked to him, Kavik said.
Chiu could have caught wind of Chai Si's recruiting drive, same as they did, and spotted an opportunity for a higher price for the information than he could have gotten in Taku. Except Chai Si had smelled a plot and responded in the most extreme manner possible.
What do we do?
Yang Chen's gaze was slack, her cheeks red.
What do we do? Kavik asked her again.
Avatar, Taiyukum said. This is your call.
I don't know.
Her lips parted and closed, half-formed words failing to take shape. If she had solutions, she was letting them die on her tongue. This was the wrong version of Yang Chen. Kavik needed the schemer who'd had him over a barrel the whole time in Bin Er, the one who was always a step ahead. This frozen, befuddled girl he didn't recognize.
You can't not know, Kavik said to her. We've been following your orders, and now two people are dead. What is the plan here?
I said I don't know.
Yang Chen's response sent the papers in the room fluttering.
If you could just shut up for a moment, there's too many of you. There's always too many of you, and none of you ever stop. You never stop.
She picked up the hat and cloak and stormed out the inn.
Avatar!
Akudan cut himself off so he didn't address her by her true identity while the door swung open. With surprising agility, he vaulted over the counter with his one hand. Kavik followed him outside, Taiyukum close behind. The inn shared frontage with a row of produce stands, which Jeonduri's many little restaurants kept busy. Customers toted away baskets of bitter gourd and cabbage, shooting starfruit and papaya. Kavik's eyes flitted from head to head. He and the others were only moments behind Yang Chen. He knew what her cover outfit looked like, and still the avatar was gone. They'd already been thrown.
We're never going to find her, Akudan muttered.
Kavik thought about the last time he'd seen her anywhere near this upset. It was at the Northern Air Temple, when she'd thrashed her way through a sleepless night, rising and falling through a forest of pillars. Besides the noise from her bending, she hadn't uttered a sound. And that had to be difficult. He had a hunch.
Where's the loudest beach around here?
He asked. The crash of surf below the cliffs of Tiger Dillo's Roar was deafening. White water coming in met the brown, sandy backflow going out in a line of battle that undulated along the coast. The rocks weren't the tallest, nor the steepest, or the most jagged, but they were slick with spray. Kavik spotted a toe of undisturbed beach peeking out from behind an outcrop, and suddenly wished his hunch were a lot stronger. Descending the cliffs would be difficult, getting back up nearly impossible for anyone who wasn't an airbender. Well, this would be an act of faith, he supposed. Kavik took off his boots and sat down on his rear. He edged forward, and as soon as he felt himself slipping, he frosted the rock under his hands and feet, making his skin stick and halting his slide. Through the cracks in the stone, he wiggled his way down. He scraped his calves and elbows a couple of times, hissing when the salt crept into the cuts. He dropped the last few feet to the sand. The numbness in his fingers and toes would go away. Jeonduri was simply too warm for him to be in the same danger from the cold as he was in Bin Er. Above, the cliff formed a slab roof, shading the small stretch of calm beach, half a tunnel over his head. On the other end was Yang Chen. Her disguise lay in a damp pile, along with her heavier outer air nomad robes. She walked a small circle in lighter garments, her arms at her sides,
and in the center of her ring, a small whirlwind spun, made visible by a column of dust. Kavik stood back, not wanting to interrupt a meditative practice. But he needn't have worried about being the spoiler. The little cyclone lost its edges, and Yang Chen staggered out of the circle's path. The exercise had failed her. She faced the ocean, and she screamed. Clenched fist, eyes shut, doubled over screams of frustration so great as to wreck the form of the Avatar herself. The waves drowned her out completely. No human could make themselves heard against the unyielding elements. Yang Chen screamed again, a meaningless contortion of her lungs, and flung a slice of wind out to sea, tearing a channel in the waves that quickly closed up like a stitched wound. She did it over and over, and despite the unimaginable power she was exerting, opening the sea like the center of a book, the waters sealed to leave no trace of her acts behind. She exhausted herself and dropped to her knees in the sand, panting. Then she looked up, her long hair whipped into strands across her face, wild and uncomposed. She saw Kavik. She didn't seem surprised he'd found her, nor ashamed that he'd witnessed her outburst. She stood up, and while her sides twitched with exertion and her eyes were red, his presence had turned her back to business. Yang Chen beckoned him deeper into the stone recess under the cliff. Kavik followed her. There was room enough for them to stand. She made him come closer and closer, and then when they were at arm's length, she slammed her feet into a low, powerful earth-bending stance. The movement of her lower body alone caused sand to shoot up, forming walls and baffles around them that muted the roar of the waves. Kavik was awed. The sheer amount of earth moved, the sophistication of the idea, the quickness of the act. It was easy to forget the girl standing before him was the most powerful bender in the world. She opened her hand and held a flame for light. "You said there was another body, besides your friends," she said. He could hear her now. "An Earth Kingdom sage with a long Nanyan-style beard," Kavik said. He snapped his fingers as it dawned on him. "That was the guy who turned on you, Si Dao?" "Si Dao." Yang Chen wiped one side of her face and then the other. "That means I got him killed, too. I have two deaths on my hands." If she screamed in here, she'd deafen them both. "Do you know what makes an air nomad?" she asked. Was she giving him a koan? Kavik had always assumed it was the freedom to go anywhere in the world. He shook his head. "It's the ability to sit down quietly, wherever you are, be it dark room or empty field, and just sit," Yang Chen said. The firelight danced in her eyes. "To sit with yourself, without causing problems or hurting anyone else. That's it. That's all it is. The airbending pales in comparison." He knew she was exaggerating, but not by much. Human desires were responsible for the position they were in. "I'm sorry," Yang Chen said. Her lips wavered. "I'm sorry about your friend. What happened to him was my fault." A few minutes ago, Kavik might have agreed wholeheartedly, pointed out that he was guilty as well, the stain covering them both. But the salt air had cleared the stench of panic and rotting flesh from his nose after he'd been so certain he'd never smell anything else again. Someone had made the conscious decision to end Cho's life. Treating his killers like a feature of the landscape took the blame away from people who deserved to hold it longer. "We're pulling out," Yang Chen said. "I can't keep you in harm's way.
We'll get you back to your parents, and I'll find you exit passes. You held up your end of the deal as much as you could.
No.
The flame wavered. To their mutual surprise, Kavik had taken hold of her wrist, like she'd done to him in Bin-Ur, to gauge his honesty. He wasn't gripping her anywhere near as tightly, but he could still feel her pulse, fluttering and warm. How could he explain it? There had to be a point beyond the deal, he wanted to say. The world needed the strength of people like Yang Chen, who gave without counting. And the deeper he became entrenched with her, the more it felt like he was finding the bits and pieces of himself he'd thought had been scraped off since leaving the North.
This is an opportunity, he said instead. They think they've caught the Avatar's spies. They'll let their guards down. We have to keep going.
She shook her head.
You heard, Tayugum. The chance you've been made is too high.
If they wanted to do me in, they would have already.
This morning had been the perfect opportunity to get rid of Kavik. Were there any suspicions hanging over him? They'd had the setup right there. Jujinta with his knives, the two of them on a boat by themselves.
I think I'm in the clear.
You're talking about a double beat that cost 2 lives to set up, she said. Our path forward would be laid over the backs of the dead. I can't even seek justice for Si Dao and Qiu while you're undercover, because the only way I could have found out about them was through you.
Yang Chen took a deep breath, and the makeshift candle in the makeshift cave rose and fell with her exhalation.
I don't think I could handle it if something happened to you. I can't lose any more friends.
Kavik didn't know how to respond. He waited until the perfect answer came to him.
Let's sleep on it.
Dropping the sand barriers and stepping back out onto the beach meant they had to shout in each other's ears to be heard.
We have to get out of here before the waters rise, Yang Chen said, her heavier clothes in a bundle over her shoulder. Unless you want to get flung out to sea or into the cliff, I need you to maintain your balance like you're treading water. You want to stay vertical, not flop on your stomach or back. Now hold your arms up.
Kavik did as he was told. Yang Chen swung her free hand, and air began to rush around his midsection. His clothes puffed up like fried dough. His heels left the ground, then his toes. She had formed an air spout under him. He knew the technique, since it was a common way to depict avatars in paintings, symbolically elevated in power. But he had never heard of an airbender wrapping a controlled cyclone around someone else.
This feels dangerous.
Only if you get scared.
Yang Chen twirled to form a vortex of her own. The two of them rose into the air, wobbling in the eyes of the miniature storms. Her instability looked like the motion of a bow in the breeze. His, the thrashing of a hooked fish. They reached the height where a fall would break his legs. He made the mistake of looking down and got caught on the inner wall of wind. Kavik circled around and around, like a ship in a whirlpool.
I messed up, he shouted. I'm scared.
Yang Chen grabbed his hand and merged their spouts. The air pressed them together, and she hugged him around the waist. With only one mass for her to worry about, they rose faster, shooting upward and over the edge of the cliff. The landing was gentler. All their feet touched down at the same time. Kavik's heart pounded in his chest.
You can let go of me now, Yang Chen said.
When Kavik realized he was embracing the Avatar tightly, he flushed with heat and jerked backward. She made no effort to tease him and put her outer robes back on, adjusting the high collar and smoothing the orange sleeves as if she needed to look presentable. She didn't follow immediately with the plain cloak that had served as her disguise.
Guard me, she said, before Kavik could point out the danger of someone identifying her. Look out for anyone coming.
Avatar Young Chen stood on the cliff, out in the open, and began to perform her duties, chanting in remembrance of the dead. Kavik kept watch as she spoke to the sea. The water tribe had their own spiritual customs for the deceased, but he'd seen an air nomad lead a funeral procession through the streets of Bin Er once before. He recognized the way her single voice split into many, nose accompanying throat, harmonizing with tongue to say the rites. After a few repetitions, she made a marked shift into lilting, high-pitched notes, a beautiful, wordless song he didn't know. Yang Chen's rich voice gave the melody a powerful foundation until she let it trail away into the wind.
A non-yan mourning lament at the end, for Si Dao, she explained. The best I could do for Si Dao. Where was Qiu from?
I don't know.
Kavik blinked and found there were tears in his eyes.
Someplace warm. He didn't want to be cold anymore. That's why he left Bin Er.
His sniffling became a shudder.
I didn't even know him that well. He was just some guy, right? No one important, but he had to have had parents. Maybe brothers and sisters. And I made him disappear.
He felt a steadying hand on his shoulder.
I saw him with you, Yang Chen said gently. And that means he hasn't disappeared. If he's part of my memories, then as strange as it is to think, there's a slim chance an avatar of future generations will understand who Qiu was through me.
Kavik was comforted by the fact that the lowly could at least have this one place in history beside the exalted.
I don't know why I'm acting like this.
He wiped his face with the back of his wrist.
We weren't that close.
You don't have to be close to someone to know they deserve better, Yang Chen said. That's what being the Avatar is about. That's what being a companion of the Avatar is about. We fight for people we've never met, and never will.
The weight of her words was a comfort, where it could have been a burden.
Am I one of your companions? Kavik said.
He knew what they'd told his parents, but it wasn't the same thing.
Am I really?
Yang Chen smiled.
Most of the world thinks I dictate who serves me and who doesn't, when nothing could be further from the truth. You're asking me if you're my companion? The choice is yours, Kavik. And it always has been.
It had taken a while, but Kavik finally understood.
I know what I choose, he said to the Avatar.
The numbers game. In Kavik's opinion, having to drink tea with someone you didn't like was one of life's sharpest little unpleasantries. The rituals, the waiting, the pouring for your partner, all hinged around patterns of polite conversation or meditative cooperative silence. When you didn't want the company, it got awkward. He and Jujinta sat at a table laid out in front of a tea stall that faced the main warehouse row of Janduri. In the last vestiges of daylight, the outlines of the city were black on a pink sky. They'd ordered the cheapest tea and the largest jug of hot water, so they weren't close to finishing yet. To add to Kavik's suffering, Jujinta was the type of monster who drank with pursed lips, sucking in air along with the liquid, making noises like a clogged straw. Kavik tried following each sip of Jujinta's with one of his own in the hopes that the Fire National would have an epiphany and realize you didn't need to be loud when drinking. But it was futile. They'd managed not to talk to each other the whole time until now. But Kavik broke and decided words were a lesser evil than the slurping.
"What's your deal?" he asked.
Jujinta finally put his cup down, thanked the spirits.
"What do you mean?"
"Why do you work for the association? Why don't you have a top knot? What's up with the rituals you perform at the safe house?"
"Just making conversation." "I don't have much of a story," Jujinta said, staring across the street.
His manner of speaking was the opposite of a Janduri intonation. Slow, flat, evenly paced, where it might have been more natural to change tempo.
"After committing a crime, I left my family behind to go seek forgiveness from the spirits. Janduri is where I ended up. The association keeps me fed, but that's it. I have no great love for our employers, or our compatriots."
That much was obvious.
"What did you do that was so bad?"
Jujinta raised his teacup back to his lips.
"I murdered my brother." Kavik couldn't find anything to say after that.
The sun finished setting behind the mountains. There wasn't time for him to decide how he felt about partnering with a kinslayer, if Jujinta was indeed telling the truth. Over by the vendor selling grilled meats, four men, association members all, tossed aside their bamboo skewers and got up from their bench. Another three men walking around the corner merged with them to form a single group. Jujinta plunked down a few coins for the tea and got up to follow them. He'd overpaid, but that was okay, because Kavik needed to steal the jug. He plucked the large clay vessel off the table and tucked it under his arm. It turned out the rules in Janduri didn't let people walk around with massive quantities of water without a good reason, which Kavik found blatantly unfair when firebenders could produce their element and earthbenders were nearly always walking on it. Then again, constantly lugging around enough liquid for combat got tiring quickly. Better waterbenders could make do with less, a single drinking skin's worth maybe. But if Kavik knew he was heading toward trouble, he liked to have as much as he could carry. People should know the weight of water, the Avatar had said. Kavik was intimately familiar with it, thank you very much. He cooled the pitcher down to lukewarm. He wasn't a monster after all, and fell in at the rear of the group. The raid had begun.
"I don't like this," Kavik said. "I'm not a head kicker."
A few days before, he and Jujinta had gotten their next job from Tail. A simple task. They were to go inside a certain warehouse near the docks at a certain time with a few other association members and emphatically vacate anyone they found inside. If folks got roughed up in the process, all the better. That was about as much detail as low-level runners tended to get. But Kavik had followed the older members around the association safe house, learned how to play sparrow bones, and intentionally lost to them the money that Akudan and Tayugum reluctantly provided. Wheedled out of them the details of their own tasks for that night. The information he brought back to Yang Chen formed a much more complete picture when combined with her knowledge.
"You're going to have to do it," Yang Chen said. "Based on what we know, your group is hitting the primary storage facility for goods going from Janduri to Bin Er. Unanimity is most likely inside that very warehouse."
"Do you remember what we said about the city's loading crews being unhappy?"
Akudan said, leaning over a rough map of the city he'd drawn himself.
"Matters have come to a head. They've staged lockdowns of the warehouses used for sorting and rearranging shipments coming in and out of the harbor. The queues inside are growing and growing. The cargo just sitting there. Shipments that should have gone out days ago. Shipments that aren't scheduled to go out for weeks. All there."
"Outbound shipments are inspected by harbor masters before they're allowed to leave port,"
and harbor masters report to their local head of state, Yang Chen said. To get past the checks, goods must come from their appointed storage spaces and go through their scheduled docks to get loaded onto certain ships. Sometimes they even have to be escorted by specific crew members during the voyage named in advance. Chai Si follows the post-platinum affair security agreements down to the brushstroke and does not let anyone play around with the side shipments.
Kavik stared at her. She caught him doing it and blushed.
What?
I don't understand how an air nomad is this familiar with the rules of commerce.
Yang Chen shrugged. I was an accountant in a past life.
Funny. Kavik had been one too.
The Avatar went on with the plan. Once you're inside, your goal is going to be the logbook, she said. It contains all of the warehouse information I just mentioned. Ship names, handler names, cargo contents, provenance, weights, buyers' names, destinations. With that level of information in our possession, we'll be able to identify unanimity and intercept it in transit. Without the book, we won't have any way to tell what's inside those crates, barring a guided tour from Chai Si herself.
I wish we had some clue, any clue, to help us narrow the possibilities down, Kavik grumbled.
Unanimity remained a frustrating blank, a complete void in their knowledge.
Yang Chen looked like she'd been saving her retort since dinner with his parents.
It's nice to want things, she said, batting her eyelashes at him, fanning pure sarcasm in his direction.
He deserved that.
You'll want to move fast, Taiyukum added. If a fight breaks out, everyone's going to be trying to secure that logbook. Since the goods can't move without the records, whoever's holding them at the end of the night will have all the negotiating power.
Yang Chen pressed a small wooden cylinder with a lanyard into Kavik's hand.
To keep you safe.
Is this a spiritual token? Kavik asked as he looped it around his neck.
It's a bison whistle, Yang Chen said. Keyed to Nu Jian. Blow on it if you get into trouble, and he'll hear it. The range should be effective for most of the island. He and I will come to your exact location.
But if I do that, it's mission over, Kavik said. Not just for the raid tonight, but the whole thing. Janduri. Unanimity.
The Avatar flying in to rescue him on her bison would be the most spectacular way to blow his cover in the world, but it would still be blown cover. I'm not sending you in without an extraction plan. What did I tell you about losing friends?
Right.
But as touched as he was, his safety wasn't the issue.
I know I have to do this, he said, but it still feels wrong. I'd be going in there to scrap with a work crew. We're talking about ordinary folks who just want a better deal. These are
the exact people I should be helping, Yang Chen said bitterly. I know, and I can't. If I make contact with them, Chai Si will suspect we're circling around that warehouse, and she'll take extra precautions. And I'm also supposed to be reeling from having my two spies taken away from me. For this double beat to work, Chai Si has to believe the Avatar's been beaten.
This was costing her, Kavik thought as she hung her head over the planning table they'd set up in the inn.
When they'd first met, he thought she rather enjoyed deception. But now that he knew her better, he could see the daylight widening through her seams.
Jujinta's probably going to love this mission, Kavik muttered.
Yes. Tell us more about this partner of yours, Yang Chen said. Kavik explained everything he'd observed about the knife thrower, including his obsessive spirituality. In the association safe house, he'd seen Jujinta whisper to himself, or kneel in a corner so many times that Kavik was able to draw for Yang Chen a passable recreation of the symbol he worshipped.
Interesting, she said. Do you think the boy is going to be trouble?
Kavik remembered Shigoro rolling around the floor, bleeding from his arm. He vaguely remembered Jujinta guiding him through the body disposal process. It was too late to do anything about his partner now, but cope.
"Nothing I can't handle," Kavik said.
"What's the count inside?"
Jujinta asked as they crossed the street.
"Should be 5 right now, give or take,"
said the leader, a gaunt Earth Kingdom transplant named Pong, who was missing his bottom front teeth, knocked out in some long-ago fight.
"They've had people coming in and out over the course of the past couple days. Tail said they won't be at full strength tonight."
The association had 9 people in their group, including Jujinta and Kavik. 2-1. Kavik did not like how a sense of satisfaction threatened to creep up his spine. Being a member of a large pack, about to overpower a smaller one. At least the stacked odds meant the association wouldn't need Kavik to subdue the people inside. He could split off from the group and search for the logbook. They came to the warehouse front. Pong raised his foot and kicked open the worker's entrance, snapping the latch. He ducked inside, the rest of them following close behind. Kavik briefly wondered why the door hadn't been barricaded, but if the workers had to leave in shifts for food and rest, it made sense that they wouldn't block their own passage. The bigger question was why there were no guards posted. The interior lamps, placed high along the walls at regular intervals to shorten the shadows, had all been lit. Stacks of wooden crates, some of them so large they could only have been dragged with winches, formed towers reaching twice as tall as a person. The smallest boxes neatly placed edge to edge on top, creating sheer faces down the sides. A moat of empty space surrounded each little castle. He craned his head to the ceiling almost involuntarily, the way Tail had smugly observed. There was water above him, rainwater contained in a giant, thin-walled metal tank. At first, he thought it would surely be too foul to drink, but then realized it was probably meant to be used for putting out fires inside the warehouse. With so much of his element nearby, he felt a little bit like a sap for bringing his own. The workers were nowhere to be seen. Pong made a sucking noise through the gap in his teeth.
"They must have got spooked and hid between the crates. Gonna be a blasted kid's game chasing them around an orchard."
"Nah, Sifu,"
came a voice from the other end of the building.
"We're right here, and I think we'll do the chasing."
A man stepped out from behind the boxes, and then another, and another. The line of workers kept growing.
"Their group is, bigger than ours," Kavik said.
Not only did they have more people, but each member of the warehouse crew was huge, nearly the size of Akudan, with thick necks and knotted forearms.
"All right," Kavik thought. "These guys lifted heavy cargo for a living."
One of the association members angrily jostled Pong in the elbow.
"You said there were 5.
Tail said there were 5. This is 5 fives.
Indeed. 2 dozen very large, very angry workers stood across from them. A better example of why one needed to pay up for a good errand runner could not have been devised. Intelligence mattered. In all his bin-er jobs, Kavik had taken care to get his numbers right. The warehouse crew, many of whom bore a family resemblance to each other, stepped forward and bellowed, sticking out their tongues and showing the whites of their eyes.
"We're not leaving," Pong said to his own men. "You want to explain to the boss that you turned tail and ran? Go ahead. But if you think for 1 second that, hey!"
There was no one standing behind him. 2 of the association members were already trying the door, but it had been closed and barred again, this time from the outside. Kavik slipped out of the way between the nearest crates, giving him a perfect, framed view of Pong, getting absolutely demolished by a running shoulder tackle from a man twice his weight. He zigzagged through the alleys of the warehouse, trying to get to the back, both to see if there was another exit, and to get closer to the area where the logbook would be stored.
If the office had interior locks, he wasn't above bolting himself inside to wait out the workers' ire. A bright flash lit up the rafters, and he heard the telltale foom of air split by flame. Firebending had broken out. He wasn't sure by which side. Distracted by the noise and light, he nearly ran into the waiting arms of the man blocking his path.
"Where are you going, Sifu?"
said the hulking worker.
"The other way."
But when Kavik turned to look, he saw another man had stepped into the lane behind him.
"You carrying drinks for the party?" said the second guy,
motioning at the vessel Kavik was still clinging onto.
"'Cause I'm already thirsty."
Both of the workers laughed, but the first one cut his chuckle short when he realized why someone would be awkwardly hauling a container of liquid around.
"Wait."
Kavik flung the entire jug without emptying it at the guy in front of him. A whirl of his arms accelerated the water inside, and the heavy missile slammed into his target's gut hard enough to shatter the clay. The man gasped and collapsed to the ground, clutching his stomach.
"Sorry."
With a pull to match the push, Kavik yanked on the water, leaving the clay shards behind because, again, he wasn't a monster, and whipped a speeding blob back the other way. The second guy hunched over and held his forearms crossed in front of his face, hoping his toughness and bulk would protect him. But brawlers went high. Wrestlers went low. Kavik lowered the angle of his flying water and knocked the man's feet out from under him. The poor worker took a hard landing on the hard floor and didn't get up. Only groaned and reached for a helping hand that wasn't there.
"Sorry."
Kavik brought the water close to himself and cradled it into a sphere, grasping the bird's tail. Tayagum had laughed at him earlier for admitting to losing fights, but he didn't lose every fight. The logbook. The important documents would be in the back. Every building in Janduri had its corner office, he reasoned. Kavik crept through the intersections, slowly weaving his element around himself, keeping it in motion so he could strike with it at a moment's notice. The sound of snapping lumber made him pause. He peeked around the corner and almost got an eye taken out by a flying splinter. Four men had trapped Jujinta by wielding long wooden planks, swinging them back and forth like torches against a jungle predator. Kavik's partner fended them off with nothing but a dagger in hand, raised high. The first person to come near him would get plugged. The problem was that the instant Jujinta picked a target and threw his weapon, he'd get rushed by the others.
"He'll be fine," Kavik thought.
He was doing great, holding up a bunch by himself. Other priorities were at stake. Kavik moved sideways to skirt the fight, fully intending to just sprint the rest of the way to the back office. But some reflex, some twinge, made him pause and look one more time around the corner again. From this angle, he got spotted. Not by the workers, but by Jujinta. The two partners made eye contact.
The distraction was enough for a plank to come crashing down onto Jujinta's shoulders.
He toppled to the ground, and his opponents pounced, laying into him with vicious kicks and stomps. Kavik swore up and down. At this rate, someone else was going to beat him to the logbook. An association man wanting to salvage some small victory, or a worker trying to secure the most valuable asset they knew was inside the warehouse. He glanced one last time in the direction he was supposed to be going, and then stepped out into the open.
"Hey, Sifus!"
They stopped kicking the living spirits out of Jujinta. So at least that goal had been accomplished. The rest was up in the air. The four men still standing looked at Kavik, and then each other before chuckling.
"Look at this guy," said the worker closest to Jujinta. "I don't think he can count."
Instead of splitting his water between the tentacles of octopus form, which would have rendered them too thin to do much damage, Kavik wrapped all the liquid he had around his right arm, turning it into a massive limb big enough to wield a bundle of planks as a single giant club.
"One," Kavik said. "That enough?"
Jujinta woke with a start, his face dripping.
"What the... where are we?"
Kavik said. We're still inside the warehouse.
They were on top of a crate tower, to be exact. The fight as a whole had not gone well for the association, and getting to an elevated position was the only thing that Kavik could think to do while Jujinta regained consciousness. The problem was that now they were treed like pygmy pumas.
You defeated those men, Jujinta said.
And then you healed me with waterbending?
Sure, that's what happened.
It would be more accurate to say Kavik had scared them off by flailing about wildly. And he still didn't know how to heal. He'd splashed Jujinta over and over again until he woke up. It was the only thing he could do with the little water he had left, and now it was gone.
They crawled to the edge of their stack and peeked over. Below, by the main walkways of the loading area, the other association members had been rounded up and forced to sit on the floor. The invaders looked woozy and beaten, but they were alive. Even Pong, who should have been flatter than a scallion being after the hit he took.
You there up on the boxes. You're still outnumbered, shouted the opposing leader, who was not the oldest or most battle-scarred member of their group, but a young man with long wavy hair cascading in abundance around his shoulders.
Jujinta hurled a blade over the side, barely looking, the way a child might throw a snowball from the cover of their fort. Kavik saw the spinning metal tumble point first into the foot of a worker standing next to the leader.
Less so now,
Jujinta called out, as his victim shrieked and fell over, pinned to the ground. Rather than get angry, the leader of the workers grimaced and rubbed his eyes. Kavik felt the same way. The longer this stalemate played out, the more dignity everyone lost.
Please stop knifing people for the moment, Kavik said to Jujinta as calmly as he could.
He needed time to think.
Jujinta nodded.
Because I've only got two left. Good call.
Pong started to laugh. Kavik thought it might have been from a head swell, but the association man was as lucid as could be.
You and your friends are history, you know that? He said to the young man holding him captive. Thanks to our boys up there distracting you, we got the logbook out. You've got no leverage now.
In a panic, Kavik counted the captured men next to Pong.
One missing.
He flipped onto his back and slammed his elbows into the crate below him in frustration. If he hadn't stopped to save Jujinta's sorry carcass, he might have been able to complete his mission.
You see? This is what I don't get about you association people, said the leader of the warehouse crew, his voice wavering. What has Chai-Si given you to deserve your loyalty, huh? Other than the chance to step on us? You'd suffer to keep her in power when she wouldn't spare you one of her sandals to eat.
The man ran a hand through his long hair, gathering the strands. His face was covered in sweat.
Negotiating with her was never an option, was it? He murmured.
He walked over to the base of the tower Kavik and Jujinta were on, then took a low horse stance and inhaled deeply.
No, 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 Kavik shouted in horror. Don't do that. We can talk.
The crew leader punched forth a stream of flame at the wooden crates, the highly flammable wooden crates.
What are you doing? Pong screamed. This whole place will go up before you know it.
You ever stand on a jetty and watch a really big wave come in? The man said as he spread the fire back and forth. Not knowing whether it'll die down before it reaches you, or keep gaining strength until it smashes you in the face? His flames petered out, and he flopped down next to Pong, resigned, his elbows on his knees. A campfire outing after a bad day.
We're on the rocks together now, Sifu,
he said, staring at the blaze he'd created.
I think we'll all sit here together until enough damage has been done.
His crew seemed to agree. A couple of them took brooms and rolled up sheaves of paper, touching them to the fire. They started going down the crate stacks with their improvised torches. The air began to fill with smoke.
What are the two of you up there going to do? The crew leader called out. Burn for Chai-Si's sake?
Kavik looked at his partner.
This is the worst job I've ever been on, Jujinta said, sounding as matter-of-fact as he had outside at the tea stand.
The crackling of flames grew louder.
Have you ever considered you've been cursed by the spirits?
Many times. The obvious solution was the water reservoir, nearly at eye level now that they were so high up, but still distant. He wound his arms and tried to pull his element to him. Nothing. The tank was too far away, and the seals were too tight.
I need an opening, he muttered.
Jujinta got to his knees, but was wobbly from the hits he'd taken.
Stand back.
He took one of his two remaining knives, sighted down the handle, and hurled it hard across the distance, sticking the point in the metal. Nothing happened. The weapon wasn't heavy enough.
I have to hammer it deeper, Jujinta said.
He hefted his last knife in his hand, as if he were making adjustments in his head for minuscule variations in weight and balance.
You miss, and we're both out of weapons, Kavik said.
Jujinta paused. He whispered to himself so softly, Kavik almost didn't hear him.
A Yuyan does not miss.
The words sounded painful for him to say. Barbs lodged in his throat. Whatever the notion meant to Jujinta, he shook it off and made his second throw, duplicating his previous movements so exactly that Kavik was convinced he'd inhaled too much smoke and witnessed the same moment in time twice. The last knife went flying through the air and landed in the pommel of the first, driving the blade further into the tank. A spray leaked around the knives, and then they were ejected by the pressure. Water poured out of the hole.
That's actually harder than what Shoguro did, Jujinta said, before he slumped over and lay down again, resting his arm over his eyes.
Kavik didn't know what a Yuyan was, and he had a feeling his mysterious partner would be less than forthcoming if they ever talked about it. But that wasn't important right now. Jujinta's precision had opened a breach. The walls of the tank were no longer an obstacle. Kavik widened the stream, tearing a bigger hole, unleashing a huge amount of stored-up pressure. The weight of water. He couldn't stop this much if he wanted to. He redirected the torrent coming out of the tank and splashed it along the flames, dousing everyone and everything inside the warehouse. As the men below shrieked beneath the indoor waves, Kavik realized he was in control right now. The only waterbender present, a king atop his mountain. And right now, the king had a mission to complete for the Avatar.
The Reckoning. You did not think this through,
Tail said as he led Kavik through the wreckage in the warehouse. True, it had been a spur-of-the-moment thing, and like most impulses, split between regrettable and victorious. Some of the crates Kavik had sliced open with blades of water, shearing the faces of whole stacks where they were neatly aligned. Others he'd burst open with internal pressure, ripping nails and pegs free from their holes. Everyone inside except for him and Jujinta had gotten knocked off their feet by a flood of slimy rainwater full of debris. As the last man standing in the aftermath, Kavik had sifted through the wreckage before reinforcements from the association arrived. And to his deepening dread, he'd found nothing out of the ordinary. Nothing that could have spurred a power grab. No money, no weapons, no hidden locked containers inside the crates. The most likely explanation was that he'd just missed something. But it turned out, Tail was the type of jerk who would rub a pet's nose in the spot they'd made to teach the poor animal a lesson.
Komodo rhino hides scraped 5 pallets, Tail said, peeking his head inside.
Derelict.
Komodo rhino hides scraped 5 pallets, Kavik repeated.
He winced as he put a mark next to the entry in the very logbook he'd come here for. Derelict.
Chop seal blanks, 10 dozen. Fine, surprisingly.
About half the shipments were declared ruined after he and Tail poked through them.
Chop seal blanks, fine. Kavik was getting every bit of information he could have possibly hoped for, in great detail, with an extra eyewitness confirmation. A spy's dream.
The only problem was that the logbook he was holding contained a tally of how much money he had personally cost the Zhongdu of Zhangduri tonight, and it grew in giant steps with each shipment declared unsalvageable. It was like forcing the prisoner to build his own gallows.
Spotted sea prunes, dried. 20 barrels derelict, Tail said. Striped sea prunes, dried. 20 barrels derelict. Mink, snake, fur, collars and ruffs, full crate, derelict. Camel yak wool, second grade. 500 skeins, derelict.
He turned to Kavik.
And we're done. You kind of ended on a losing streak there.
The value of the wrecked goods was of a size where the numbers didn't matter anymore, as far as Kavik's own life was concerned.
They were going to burn everything, he said. I didn't destroy this stuff. I saved half of it. Bold claim. We'll see if the boss agrees after you explain what happened. Come, I got a ride waiting outside.
Kavik snapped the tip of his charcoal pencil.
The boss? He was going to meet Chai Si?
Of course. The larger the mistake, the higher you had to raise the flag of your shame. He followed Tail to the door, his arms and legs suddenly heavy. Jujinta and the rest of the undersized association squad that had gone in with Kavik waited by the exit. Pong, their nominal leader, sneered at Kavik and nodded as Tail led him out. The new guy would catch the blame, as was tradition.
Don't look so smug, Pong, Tail said. You're gonna account for this, too.
When Pong sputtered, his tongue poked out through the gap on his teeth.
What? How is this my fault? Do I look like a waterbender to you?
Tail was unmoved.
Doesn't matter. You were in charge. Your raid, your loss. You sent us in without enough strength and left us hanging. We did the best we could.
Pong was frantic at the prospect of being lumped in with Kavik's coming punishment.
I'll explain to Chai Si myself if I have to. It wasn't my fault.
Tail halted and grimaced, making the face of a person who stubbed their toe, more annoyed at their own stupidity than anything else. He turned around slowly, and then slammed his hand into Pong's stomach. Pong's eyes goggled out, and he made a single weak cough. At first, Kavik thought Tail had merely punched him. A surprise body blow. No shame in keeling over from one of those. But a dark drip spattered on the floor.
Chai Si,
Tail said loudly for the benefit of any and all witnesses.
Who's that? I don't know a Chai Si.
Kavik sprang back from the blood pooling on the ground as if it were a living, skittering insect. He shut his eyes and cowered away. But the image of Tail cradling Pong by the neck with one hand and working the point of his knife upward with the other was going to be etched into his nightmares. No, he whispered in his head. He crouched down, as if getting lower, taking cover, would shield him from another death. No. Pong's bloody wheezes became the loudest sounds in the entire warehouse. Then they stopped.
Wrap him in the wool and wet it down before you nail the crate shut, so the whole thing rots,
Kavik heard Tail say.
It'll hide the smell until we can throw the goods out.
Kavik opened his blurry eyes a crack to see two men dragging Pong's body away. They were much smoother than he had been with Chiu. Practice must have made perfect.
Get up, Sifu waterbender,
Tail said to Kavik as he wiped the blade of the murder weapon with a cloth.
The boss doesn't have time to wait for you to grow a spine.
Jujinta stepped between them. He'd recovered his wits from the fight and was back to his usual imperturbable self. Pong's death had not affected him in the slightest, and neither did Tail.
That's my partner, he said.
Tail threw his head back and sighed.
Juji, I only put the two of you together because I thought it would be good for a laugh. And if you don't back down right now, well, there's plenty more crates that need to be disposed of.
Kavik could only think of how Jujinta was out of knives. Tail still had the one. He rose to his full height and put a shaking hand on Jujinta's shoulder.
It'll be okay, he said, trying to keep his voice steady.
He still had one more out, looped around his neck.
I'll be fine.
He tried a reassuring shake. It took three before Jujinta was convinced enough to step aside. Kavik followed Tail into the street and got into the carriage that was waiting for them. Together, they rode off to see where the evening would end. The night was still young by John Duty's standards. Tail's carriage was enclosed, so the passing sounds of revelry were muffled. A sudden burst of laughter from a drunken party made Kavik clutch the logbook tighter. The fact that he'd been told to hang on to it was probably meant to be demeaning at this point. A weight around his neck. One of the wheels took a hard dip into a pothole. Kavik's ears perked for a splash, water he might have used to protect himself with. But there was none.
Something on your mind? Tail said.
A great deal.
Pong was your man, through and through. He fought for the association, and that's how you repay him?
Where Pong chose to place his faith is none of my business. He had a problem keeping his mouth shut, and he botched the raid. People who become more trouble than they're worth in Jandari tend to vanish.
Bile rose in Kavik's throat. Any claim this city was better than Bin Ur was a load of crock. It was just more organized.
What's going to happen to the workers?
Well, they have families, so we can't make them disappear easily. And it's gonna be hard for us to pin blame for the cargo losses on them, because none of them were waterbenders. For now, they'll sit in a harbormaster's brig safe and sound.
Tail thumped the wall of the carriage with his knuckles.
If I remember correctly, you don't have family in the city, do you?
Kavik shrunk in his seat. He was a fresh face, just like he and Yang Chen had discussed. Completely clean. The association didn't have to worry about anyone coming to look for him. He avoided touching the bison whistle under his cussbook.
Not yet.
His mind was in as many pieces as the inventory. Despite the fact that he'd come up blank on two different inspections of the warehouse, there was something in the logbook that felt like the missing piece to his mission. He just couldn't put his finger on it yet. If he survived the night and made contact with the others, he could try recreating its contents from memory. If... The carriage came to a stop. Kavik heard the driver outside jump down and open the door. Tail motioned for him to get out first. Kavik stepped onto a pathway leading to a luxurious two-story cottage. The windows, real glass windows, were bright. The chirping of cicada crickets over the lawn and the gentle clucking of the ostrich horses made him think of a farm. Animals got slaughtered in farms.
In there, Tail said, and keep the book with you.
They walked up to the entrance, which Tail opened for him like a guest of honor. Kavik paused to consider whether the bison whistle could be heard from inside a building. He weighed the option of jumping on the other man right now and fighting for his life. His first step into the house would be an opportune time to slide a knife between his ribs.
Are you not coming? He asked.
I was ordered to stay behind, Tail said.
I'm just your humble courier. The boss says you're to go find a seat and wait.
It was now or never. Kavik took a deep breath and crossed the threshold. The door slammed shut behind him. He found himself in a narrow maze of luxury. Boxed in by a sweet-smelling wooden hallway, his feet
sinking into carpet as lush as a bog. An expensive glowing crystal cut with dozens of facets hanging overhead.
Hello?
He tried. No answer. He moved slowly, as if each piece of furniture he encountered might be a trap. A trunk would open its jaws and swallow him whole. Or he'd fall through the squeaking floorboards into a spiked pit. There was only one door open, and it led to a small study. He took one of the chairs in the corner and waited as he was told. His pulse became the thrum of a dragonfly hummingbird's wings. His one solace was that this was far too nice a place to kill him. His corpse would make too much of a mess. The sound of footsteps coming from the ceiling. The master of the house descended the stairs above the study. Kovic's spine straightened. His lips parted. He froze in a tilted halfway state, poised to get up, but unable to leave his chair. Between his wooden home and this old workbench on the lowest floor of New Kingux, Kovic had learned it was possible, extremely possible when you were familiar with the person, to tell who was going up and down a flight of stairs just by the sound. His father was a slow thud, 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 always catching and settling his weight fully before the next step. His mother's telltale noise was a sliding swish, since she always held onto a banister if available. If not, she ran her hand along the wall. And the trail of light thumps that slalomed from one side of the stairs to the other, as if the maker of the noise were slowing their descent down a mountain by following a path of switchbacks, belonged to a single person in Kovic's life. The door to the study opened, and in walked the boss of the association.
"Hi, Kovic," said his older brother, Kalyan.
"Closing the deal." "No." That was all Chai Si had cared to say to Hansha about delivering unanimity to Bin Er. Through a hawk, not a human messenger. Si Dao hadn't returned. It didn't take a genius to figure out why. Sitting in his office in Bin Er, Hansha crumpled the tiny scroll with its one-word response and hurled it at the hawk that had brought it, scaring the bird into flying off before a return message could be stuffed into the tube on its leg. He hated Chai Si's blatant hypocrisy about the animals, the way she sent outbound letters when it suited her, but still demanded in-person visits. He was going to have to play by her rules one more time. Immediately, he packed his bags. He reassured the panicking Shangs that everything was fine, and he'd be back soon with the solution to all their problems. "Fine," had been their reaction. "Fine." Did he not see the barricades going up? Whole sections of town blocked off? Traffic had been cut in half. There were rumors the Earth King was getting ready to step in. This was exactly why they needed unanimity, Hansha told the Shangs. To blow out the fires they insisted on setting underneath their own chairs. The anger in the streets wasn't the Avatar's doing. Neither was the Earth King's growing suspicion. This was a harvest sown of greed and idiocy. Now if they could let him do his job, please. It was the most he'd ever told his bosses off, which was fine. Either he was going to come back from Janduri a dead man walking, or with more power in his hands than he knew what to do with. A perk of his position was that he was allowed unrestricted personal travel between Shang cities. He was one of the few people who could enjoy a passenger's status without questioning by harbor masters. Once he was on board, he spent most of the trip lying in his bunk, staring at the ceiling of his solitary quarters, pondering the irony. Who would have thought that cutting back on the illicit shipments would be the tipping point for the residents of Bin Er? After the Avatar left, Henshi and the Shangs had attempted to erase all traces of the unreported traffic she'd held over their heads. A move that was just common sense. They'd turned junks away, canceled contracts, dumped the workers who would have processed those goods. That last bit had set everything over the edge.
Why? Henshi had to ask.
So many other past deals under past Zongdus had ended in similar fashion. Why did the city have to lose its mind over this one? He wasn't a man who asked for much. He didn't need the whole world dancing to his tune. All he wished for was fairness. For the cogs to fit together and turn in the direction they were supposed to. The title of Zongdu offered the holder an opportunity to make astounding amounts of money from kickbacks, budget skimming, and guiding the flow of deals and contracts. That was how it worked. That was why it cost so much money to bribe the people necessary to get appointed to the role in the first place. The procedure, standardized by the office holders before Henshi, was to go into massive amounts of debt to scrape the bribes together, make even more massive profits during your term as Zongdu, and then pay back the original loans. The difference that could be pocketed was potentially so large you'd need every pair of trousers in the middle ring to hold it. Previous generations of Zongdus had successfully extracted their rewards and moved on. Duxim had gotten in and out with his money. That was how the process worked. But apparently, now, during Henshi's turn, was when the gears had to fall off their pinnings. The Avatar had decided to make a name for herself, using him as a stepping stone. Forget a profit. If his term didn't end the way he needed it to, he'd be ruined. Lower than lower ring ruined. He just wanted what similar people in his position had received. To get in and out. Was that so much to ask? Couldn't the Avatar have delayed her efforts by a few years, until after he'd left Bin-Ur and disappeared from the annals of the Four Nations? He didn't love the fundamental idea behind unanimity, honestly. Didn't have the same grand hopes for it as Chai Si. But it was the only tool at his disposal that had the chance of staving off disaster. When they arrived in Zhangdudi and he disembarked from the boat, feeling mugged by the humidity and heat, he found a woman waiting for him on the dock among the coils of rope and barrels of pitch. She was pretty, with a smile wide enough to engulf a mango. He knew she was one of Chai Si's attendants. He asked her name. It didn't matter, she said. If the Zongdu of Bin-Ur would be so kind as to accompany her, her mistress was waiting. Henshi had been to Chai Si's house before, and he suffered the climb through the damp, insidious jungle. Once he was inside, he saw it was still the same plain little training hall, aspiring to a guru's austerity. Nothing had changed since his last visit, except for its owner, sitting in her chair. "You look ready to pop," he said to Chai Si. "What happened to your old servant, the man with the scar over his eye?" "What didn't happen to him?" she said calmly. "I hired someone else. It was a matter of security." Henshi waited until the new attendant finished pouring their tea and left. The girl didn't need to know about the grisly fates her employer liked to deal out for disloyalty. "It would be nice if you didn't have the same response every time your paranoia flares up. You literally killed my messenger." "You chose a poor messenger. Suda was a member of the Avatar's retinue and could have easily passed on your information to her. Did you ever stop to think he might have been happily collecting payments from you and the Shangs of Bin-Ur while remaining loyal to her? The best of both worlds." No. Henshi hadn't considered that Suda had ever gotten the better of him, but he wasn't going to admit it. "All I'm saying is that you don't have to jump straight to permanent solutions."
"Suda wasn't the only potential spy I had to deal with," Chai Si went on, ignoring his advice. "There was a boy from Bin-Ur, an obvious plant attempt. And then the Avatar herself shows up on my island. You were sloppy, Hunsha. Painfully so.
She dropped the words he'd been fearing the whole boat ride.
My answer is still no. Unanimity came to fruition with my research, and I have borne its costs. We're not deploying it simply because you've bungled the situation in your own city.
Hunsha stood up from his chair. He was a tall man, and he loomed over Chai Si like a shade palm.
Do you know what the difference is between you and me?
He asked. He dropped his gaze.
Unlike you, I'm not interested in building a dynasty.
He had her attention now. Chai Si shifted, folded in her chair an inch.
I know you've got plans, Hunsha said. Grand plans for the future. Your bloodline etched into history. Admirable, really. But if I don't get to see tomorrow, neither will you. I know too much about you, and your little experiments that you're hoping might keep you in power forever.
It wouldn't take much for me to convince the Fire Lord he should put Janduri in the hands of a less ambitious functionary.
He picked up the steaming teapot, still mostly full.
If you don't help me put out the fire in my house, then I will make sure it spreads to yours,
he said to his fellow Zongdu. He hurled the vessel at the wall above her shelf. The porcelain burst, sending hot water cascading over her precious books and scrolls. She made no movement, other than to eye him up and down. He let her. The more spiteful and reckless she thought him, the better. Chai Si was the one with the long-term outlook. She wanted to keep her title forever and for all time. She wanted this little island to become her own clan holding. This city the jewel in her crown. In her eyes, she had generations to lose. She came to a conclusion.
I relent. You've convinced me that the best place for unanimity is Bin Er. But I need more time.
Hunsha nodded, rocking his head over and over. So that's how it is. He knew Chai Si well enough that when she was done talking to you, truly had no intention of humoring a single word coming out of your mouth. She started feeding you promises, details. She would politely delay until you withered on the vine.
Of course, Hunsha said, getting up to leave. This is an important decision. It shouldn't be rushed.
He walked out of her house, knowing exactly what to do. He was going to call in the one person who could get unanimity from Janduri to Bin Er quickly. Right out from under Chai Si's nose. Once the assets left her shores, her reaction wouldn't matter in the least. Chai Si might have thought him incapable of long-term planning, but that wasn't the case. For all her smugness about catching spies, she'd missed a very deep plant Hunsha had successfully put inside her organization. Someone who had been in his pocket from the day he first stepped onto Janduri's soil. He just hoped Kalyan still remembered the signal for linking up. It had been a while since they last spoke.
Following through.
Well, Kalyan said, aren't you going to say anything?
Kavik screamed and launched himself at his brother. Kalyan happened to be the one person who could trounce him at wrestling every time. So when he managed to tackle Kalyan to the carpet and start throwing punches, some part of him knew this was an apology gift. Kalyan letting it happen. That meant he had to get his licks in quickly.
You, he shouted, trying to get around Kalyan's forearms. His brother was laughing underneath. Laughing? You.
There was no finish to the insult, because at this moment, Kavik truly did not know what Kalyan was. Someone he hadn't seen in years. Someone who'd walked away from his family. He managed to grab Kalyan's hair and give the back of his head a thump against the floor.
Oh, all right, that's enough.
In a flash,
Kalyan was behind him, snaking an arm around his neck and yanking him backward. Kalyan squeezed tighter until Kavik's spit rattled in his throat and he smacked at his older brother's elbows, a plea for mercy. Kalyan dragged Kavik to his feet. Only once they were both standing did he release the hold. Kavik gasped as his windpipe reformed back into shape. He took a lap around the study to catch his breath, his hands on his kidneys like a stooped elder out for his morning walk. Kalyan waited patiently, resting against a bookshelf. Kavik's brother had not lost the perpetual leanness in his face that spoiled the chance of a strong family resemblance. His hair had grown out, and he seemed to have given up on keeping it tied. They'd been about the same height when they'd seen each other last, but Kavik was shocked by the fact anyway.
"So," said Kalyan, "how are mother and father?"
"You don't get to ask that," Kavik snarled. "You don't get to ask that when you could have visited us, written us, let us know you were alive."
"Kavik, I could have done absolutely none of those things."
Kalyan waved his arms to say, "Look around you."
"Yes, they were in Jandori. That was the problem."
"You were here the whole time," Kavik muttered, "working for Zhongdu Chai Si."
Kalyan looked embarrassed. "Technically, I'm working for Zhongdu Hanshe."
Kalyan explained that early on in his errand-running career, he associated with like-minded, ambitious young people in the international quarter. It was a good way to meet potential buyers. He became friends with a low-level administrator named Hun She, who had an appetite for risk as big as his. They started working together, securing small advantages and trading them into bigger ones. The two of them were a successful team. With Kalyan's help, Hun She got his name out in the ranks of Bin Er leadership and managed to secure more resources for more ambitious plans, such as getting Kalyan overseas.
"The idea was that I'd be even more valuable on the other end of a trade route," Kalyan said. "A deep plant inside another Zhongdu's organization? Worth a fortune. Jandori was the biggest opportunity. I arrived here, made my way into Chai Si's association, and started passing Hun She information. I think it worked better than expected."
"Better?" came Kavik's strangled reply. It was as if Kalyan were still choking him. Kalyan made the look around gesture again.
"I rose faster and higher in Chai Si's ranks than we could have dreamed. I take care of the projects she doesn't want her name linked to, which means I have a say in matters. For example, that mess you made at the warehouse? Not a problem anymore, because I said so. Everyone, including Chai Si and Tail, will see it as the new guy heroically saving half the goods instead of destroying half, because I see it that way."
He was acting like he wanted Kavik to share in this feeling, this exuberance.
"Once I got in deep, I couldn't contact the family safely, not even with a messenger hawk."
"Oh, how thoughtful of you," Kavik shouted. "You were protecting us."
"I'm protecting you still, Kavik. I got you through the association door, because otherwise, you would have blundered straight into Chai Si's arms. Just because I slipped past her guard doesn't mean you're capable of it. Why would you risk your life for the Avatar of all people? There's no gain there."
"You don't know who I'm working for," Kavik said, trying to force the words to come out evenly. His attempt at evasion was pitiful. It was impossible to hide from someone who had your measure so fully.
"I do, though. Given the resources it took to get me to Jandori, there's no way you could have made it here recently without abusing air nomad travel privileges, and the fact that you showed up at the same time as the world's most famous air nomad makes it pretty clear you're after something big. Hand me the logbook, won't you?
Kavik picked the book up from the floor and flung it at his brother's head. Kalyan ducked, caught it as it bounced off the wall, and came up laughing again.
I assume you started working for her for the same reason I fell in league with Hunshu. You thought it was the right move for the family.
Passes. Kavik had just wanted to get passes out, to leave the mess of the Shang cities behind. That's how this had started. Kalyan laid the logbook open on the desk, inspecting the recorded damage, the itemized contents. Kavik's handwriting all over the pages.
Well, now I also have to assume you've memorized this. Curse our family's steel trap mines. I'm going to kill Tail for not doing this work himself.
Like you killed Chiu? Because he might have recognized you if he got too far inside the association? Like you killed that minister who worked for the Avatar? Kalyan did not raise his eyes from the book, nor did he answer the questions.
You've put me in a really bad spot, he said. If the Avatar gets too desperate for answers, too scared on your behalf, she might smash apart the whole trade route, regardless of the consequences.
He turned a page, and Kavik could see his brother's swift, furious, restless mind working at speeds he had never been able to fathom in the past, and still couldn't now.
I need to give her a victory. A distraction while I pry unanimity out of Chai Si's grip and into Hun Shu's. Once it reaches Bin Er, this'll all be over.
Vintage. Utterly vintage, Kalyan. Striding through the blizzard, impervious to the weather. Are you going to tell me what unanimity is? Kalyan gave him the same smirk from when they were younger, when he came back to camp with bigger fish than anyone else.
Nothing bad. Just leverage Hunsha needs to maintain balance in Bin Er. He wants the same thing as your boss, really. Stability. Peace.
The Avatar Kavik knew had railed against the idea of peace bought with suffering. Bin Er wasn't balanced if the city bled families into the mountains.
You're afraid to tell me, Kavik said. You're about to give Hun Shu an asset that'll let him get away with whatever he wants, and you want me to close my eyes and pretend everything will be okay.
Because it will. Nothing bad is going to happen if the Avatar doesn't get her way. The sun will rise, business will go on as usual. The world will be tomorrow much as it was yesterday. Another flip of the page.
She just needs to receive the right information from the right source, and then all will be well.
The implication was clear.
You want me to turn on her, Kavik said. You want me to betray the Avatar.
His brother at least had the decency to look up, to keep his shoulders from shrugging.
You make it sound like you'd be plunging a dagger into the beating heart of the Four Nations. I'll give you some good intelligence to pass on. Treasure she'd be delighted to have in any scenario. It'll just be a little out of date.
Kalyan was already talking about his betrayal like an inevitability. An assumption where his loyalties would lie. But a powerful one. Why would I do that?
Because you don't owe her anything, Kalyan snapped. How is that so hard to understand?
He slammed his fist into the book.
Kavik, Hunsha has me in a bind. I have to come through for him right here and now, or else he'll reveal me to Chai Si. If she finds out I was the plant the whole time, I wouldn't be dead. I'd be wishing I was. Becoming food for shark squids is better than what Chai Si would do to me.
He continued to press the pages until his knuckles cracked.
We're in a vulnerable position. You, me, those two water tribe fellows running your safe house? You're very good at slipping tails, Kavik, but not as good as I am at keeping them.
Kalyan twisted his lips.
Their names are Akudan and Tayakum, right? They seem to be taking good care of you. What are they? Substitutes for our parents while you're in Jeonduri?
Maybe they're substitutes for you.
His brother looked genuinely hurt. I was going to come back, Kalyan said quietly. Once I was ready and had the means, I was going to come back. You have to believe that.
Kavik didn't respond. Kalyan shook his head and his grimace disappeared. Back to being the one in charge, the one who knew more.
I am asking you to protect me, Kavik. Have you forgotten I'm your family? These people, Hunsha, Chai Si, Yang Chen, they don't matter in the end. Let them play their games against each other. I can admit that we're both in a little too deep at this point. But only one of us is going to be killed if he fails. If there's a person in this world you owe, it's me, little brother, not the Avatar.
Somewhere along the line, the language of Middlers had infiltrated their relationship. Kalyan had saved his life before, and now the debt was being called in. What had happened to them? How had they come to this? You didn't try to square accounts with your own flesh and blood. The notion was madness.
You know, if you play this right, you can have it both ways, Kalyan said. Just make the Avatar believe she needs to go to Port Tugak. The assets were tested there. She'll find plenty of clues to linger over. You'll be her hero.
He smiled to himself, liking this plan the more he thought about it.
In the meantime, she'll be delayed long enough to miss the real shipment. You'd have plausible deniability afterward. Given the evidence, her failure wouldn't look like your fault. She won't suspect you did anything wrong. You can even remain her companion if you enjoy it so much.
The advantage. The opportunity. Kalyan saw things Kavik could not, aimed at targets over the horizon and hit them as if they were inches away.
You'd love that, Kavik said, because then you'd have someone on the inside of the Avatar's retinue.
Well, yeah, Kalyan said. As long as we're being honest with each other.
That was it. Kavik found his limit. He broke. The act of breaking hurt, physically. A deep, shuddering sob ripped through his chest. He tried to laugh, but only succeeded in making a dry, hollow noise, like a ladle scraping the sides of an empty barrel. It was the sound of capitulation. Weakness.
Just tell me what story to give her, Kavik said.
As soon as Kavik re-entered the inn, he knew his brother's ruse was going to work. It was the way Yang Chen's eyes lit up when she saw him. The Avatar was simply glad her friend was back, safe and sound. She refused to debrief him until he settled down and got comfortable, bade Akudan and Tayagum to get him something to drink.
We were wrong about the warehouse, Kavik said, a steaming cup of tea in his hands.
He was wrapped in a blanket, despite the Jeonduri heat. Yang Chen had noticed he was shivering and draped one over his shoulders herself.
Unanimity's not there yet.
He started with the truth. The battle in the warehouse. His last stand with Jujinta, whom he took an aside to describe. The fires set by the workers, and how, lacking any other options in the moment, he'd brute-forced the crates open. It was a great story, because it was real. At the time, he'd been acting fully in the Avatar's interests. His audience understood very well the risk he'd taken on behalf of the mission.
Reckless little twerp, Tayagum muttered.
But his smirk held a hint of respect. There could be no better build-up for what Kavik was about to say next.
They made me catalog the damage, so I got a perfect view of all the goods and the logbook.
There's nothing suspicious inside the warehouse right now. But there is a shipment scheduled to arrive in Jandori from Port Tugach, with 3 slots in the storage queues reserved, so they can be transferred quickly from Jandori to Bin Er. The information sunk in quickly. Yang Chen snapped her fingers. Chaisi didn't care about the goods inside the warehouse. She only wanted the space cleared. A lie that rested on an intelligent victim piecing the falsehood together themselves was the most perfect form of the art. Each word that fell out of Kavik's mouth tipped the scales toward his brother's victory.
"We weren't too late in Jandori," he said. "We were too early. Unanimity is coming here from Port Tugach."
"Do you know what ship it's on?"
Akudan asked. Kavik gulped his tea to fight back his nausea.
"The Sunbeam. 3-masted junk. I don't know if it's departed yet."
He stopped there. He had a scrap of paper in his pocket that backed up his story. The idea was to claim he'd taken a blank sheet and pressed it against the charcoal markings in the logbook, lifting the proof directly from the page.
"It's funny. Going after this information was a smart move on the Avatar's part," Kalyan had said as they were rehearsing the story. "You were so close to getting it right with the logbook contents. So close."
Kavik knew with absolute certainty the extra layer to the ruse, the hard evidence, wasn't going to be necessary.
"I have to get to Port Tugach," Yang Chen said, even quicker than he thought she would.
The Avatar's trust impaled him through his heart. She couldn't show him the mercy of second-guessing his memory, making him repeat events for clarity. His word was all she needed.
"I have to leave as soon as possible," she said. "Now. If the Sunbeam is due to arrive soon, then I can intercept it in open water by following the shipping lanes in reverse. If I catch it before it leaves harbor, even better."
"That could be a short flight or a very long one," Akudan said. "What are you going to do once you find the Sunbeam?"
"I'll think of something," Yang Chen said. "Spiritual intervention, plague check. The only thing that matters is stopping it."
The Avatar's happiness hurt to look at. She'd discovered she was in a better position than she'd originally thought. Who wouldn't be pleased to have more time? She looked at the others.
"You two," she said to Akudan and Tayagum. "I need you to keep an ear out for the warehouse workers, in case Chaisi tries to retaliate against them. Kavik, stay under your cover with the association. If the shipment slips past me, you're our last shot at keeping it out of the hands of the Zhongdus."
"You can't go to Port Tugach alone," Kavik said.
"You won't have anyone to watch your back."
The words slipped out without guile. He'd simply lapsed on which goal he was working toward. Was caught between 2 minds.
"It'll be fine," Yang Chen reassured him. "Our enemies lack compunction, but I don't think they've worked their way up to murdering the Avatar yet."
She bounded over to Kavik and gave him a crushing hug.
"I knew I was right about you,"
she whispered in his ear, fondness radiating from her embrace. Yang Chen had already been putting on plain clothes every time she visited the inn after the first visit. When she donned her palm leaf hat, her posture and gait turned into that of the most common form of wildlife in Jandori, the oblivious late-night reveler. She went out the door and vanished into the darkness. At Kalyan's orders, Kavik spent the next 2 days at the association safe house instead of the inn. He told Tayagum and Akudan sleeping there would help protect his cover. Really, they were being split up so they could be watched separately.
"The association will know if you've warned your friends," Kalyan had told him. "Don't tell them anything, for their own safety."
Kavik took his advice and said nothing to the men who had risked themselves to shelter and feed him.
told them nothing about the danger they were in. At the Association Hall, there was little work to be found, so the place was mostly empty. He had no one left to talk to but Jujinta. Another dislodged person with nowhere else to go in the city. After some conversation, Kavik came to a fresher understanding of his partner's intense spiritual concerns. Even if Jujinta refused to explain where he came from, the exact terms of his brother's death, or how he was responsible.
"There are crimes one cannot live down," Jujinta said over a sparrow bones table, where the two of them pushed tiles around into winning patterns, unable to play for real without more members of their group.
"Certain acts cannot be forgiven."
"Not even by the right person?" Jujinta seemed determined to remain unworthy.
"The person who could have granted me forgiveness is gone," he said. "I ask the spirits every day and receive no answer. I don't know who else I could turn to for guidance."
It wasn't Kavik, that much was certain. He had his own betrayal to finish carrying out. The next day, at Kalyan's orders, he left Jujinta behind, left both safe houses behind, and got on a ship bound for Bin Ur, alongside the very boxes containing unanimity. Dreams within dreams. Yang Chen had to be careful along the journey. Southern storms could roll in quickly from the horizon, and when dark weather caught you in the air, it chewed you up and swallowed you into the sea. It was times like these where Yang Chen's difficulties with sleep had an upside. She dozed a little when she could. She trusted Nu Jian to grumble if he spotted signs of people in the water below, and when he needed to rest, she kept watch while he floated in place. They ate sparingly from the same rations of dried vegetables and drank from clouds she condensed with bending. But she knew her companion was burning his fat reserves without the chance to forage on land. When they passed through the invisible wall of a cold front, and the mists crawling over the waves sent a shiver up her spine, a part of Yang Chen wished she had listened to Kavik and not come alone. Jetson's previous visits to the spirit world had prepared her well to guide Yang Chen through her first. The older nun stepped sure-footed across a brook of flowing crystal. Yang Chen just had to walk where she walked. "The spirit world is different things to different people at different times," Jetson said. "But it's safe as long as you keep respect in your heart. The more you can ask, listen, and give thanks to your surroundings before your impact is felt, the better. Even holding the intention in your mind is good." Yang Chen looked down at the odd cross between earth and water swirling around their ankles, liquid jewels cool to the touch.
"Can we bend here?"
"No. That's because our bodies are back in the physical world. The Abbess and Siring are looking after them. If we feel the need, we can remember where we are, think about waking up, and we will." Jetson did not slip the words simply into her explanation. She knew Yang Chen had problems with waking up, bringing herself to the right moment in time and space. Yang Chen glanced down at her hands, the ones that could open or close. They looked like her flesh and blood, down to the calluses. If all of her senses were telling her that her body was here, amid these shining, swirling colors, she would have to defy her own mind to escape. The thought made her a bit nervous, and the waters around her flickered, threatened to change. But she saw Jetson standing on the other bank of the brook, and knew nothing would go wrong as long as they were together. Yang Chen gathered her robes and stepped onto firmer ground. Neither of them realized the warning that Jetson had spoken aloud. "Different things to different people." Oblivious, they walked toward a lonesome forest, the edges visible over the flat land, like a cake sitting on a table. Maybe that was the mistake. Air nomads didn't fear the woods in their bones. Airbenders peered down at the tree lines below them from the tops of their mountains, and no beast with claws or fangs really had the ability to climb a peak. They'd gone only a little way when Yangchen heard a deep huff. The expulsion of air from a powerful set of lungs bigger than a human's. She'd grown up around the bellowing of sky bison, but this wasn't the sleepy grumble of an herbivore. This was a swift clearing of the nostrils to better taste the air for prey. Yang Chen's breath clouded in frost, even though it had been perfectly warm seconds ago. As if the trees were not far away and were only pieces of dressing for a stage, a creature stepped out from behind them. It looked like a tiger dillo clothed in blue. Either it wore a pointed hat on its head, or it possessed a horn that looked exactly like one. Painted red lips curled back to reveal rows of jagged white fangs curving in random directions, more hedge thorns than teeth. A second spirit and a third appeared.
Sure,
Jetson said, gazing at them. They look intimidating, but they're playful. When she didn't get a response, she turned around. The avatar had frozen in place.
What's wrong? Jetson asked. You're not afraid of beasts. You had the Southern Chieftain's polar bear dog eating out of your hand when you were 8.
True. Yang Chen was not afraid of animals. Animals loved her, and she loved them back. But Yang Chen wasn't the person whose terror the Shishi were smelling. The nuns of the Western Temple had erred. Damula, Siring, Jetson, and even Yang Chen herself. They all believed a visit to the spirit world could help her establish a solid identity, bolster her young mind against the ancient anguish. An extra tether she could rely on when the ghosts of the four nations became too strong. But they'd never considered an overwhelming memory occurring inside the spirit world, brought on by a previous avatar's fear of the realm beyond the physical. The Shishi licked their slavering lips. Their eyes, which at first had seemed mere daubs on a flat scroll, gained depth and focus. Their faces wrinkled with human-like, malevolent contours. Yang Chen, Jetson said calmly, firmly. You don't have to stay. You can wake up. She tasted flowing blood. She'd bitten a chunk out of the inside of her cheek, her knees locked up. The pack of spirits fanned out into a hunting formation. Jetson grabbed the avatar, tossed her over her shoulder, and ran. Because Jetson was holding her charge so close, she was unable to see the child Yang Chen had become. Yang Chen's sleeves had turned an undyed color. Her hands had shrunk to a younger, smaller size, and she cried out in an unfamiliar pattern. Not Ma, or Mama, or Amma. The spirits were black flames licking along the grass, chasing them, closing in. The growling and panting grew louder. Was there ever such an oft-repeated story? A woman racing for safety, holding a child chased by predators? Wake up, Jetson murmured into her ear. Yang Chen didn't know how she had breath to flee and speak at the same time. I won't leave you here. Wake up for me first, and then I'll be right behind you. They came to a halt. The brook had turned into a river, raging, churning. Deliverance might have lain on the other side, but the beaded jewels had been replaced by a syrupy dark tar that hissed when it spattered along the bank. They would never make it across. Jetson decided on something. Yang Chen could feel her determination pass through their chests, two bodies skewered by the same spear. In one swift motion, Jetson ripped her orange shawl from her shoulders and bundled it over Yang Chen's head. She didn't want the Avatar to see her fate. She took Yang Chen under the arms and shoved her as hard as she could into the air.
"Wake up!"
Jetson screamed. Yang Chen fell and fell, but never landed. Not on the riverbank or in the bilious flow. She opened her eyes back in her own skin. She saw Abbess Damola cradling Jetson's slumped over body, trying to rouse her. Searing stared at Yang Chen, like a musician who'd left the last note of the piece unplayed. Yang Chen would forever remember the moment as the first time she was asked a question beyond her years. Begged for an answer she couldn't provide.
"Avatar," Searing whispered. What happened?